Hello, rebels, and welcome to Ill-Behaved Women. I'm L.L. Kirshner, your host and author of two memoirs based on my life and work in Qatar and India, and also the novels The Queen Pin Chronicles, which includes Florida Girls, Vegas Girls, and very soon Havana Girls. Today, I want to share a few stories from the news and then jump into one of my favorite topics, ill-behaved women of history. In this case, the journalists Nellie Bly, Margaret Bourke White, and Agnes Underwood. Now, for those of you who have read my memoirs, this, my interest in these women, will come as no surprise. But to let the rest of you in on that, I was a teenage runaway. I would not have even gone to college if it weren't for the fact that I got sober before I was of legal drinking age. Now, I believe 100% it was my fascination with women who refused to stay in their prescribed lanes that saved my hide. And these incredible stories perfectly capture why I started this podcast, to celebrate the power of storytelling to change hearts, minds, and the world. First, though, I have to share some news segments that caught my attention. Women are making headlines in Hollywood once again, but for once, it's in the best way. That's right. In 2024, for the first time in U.S. history, women achieved gender parity on the big screen, according to two separate studies. The top grossing films of 2024 were led by female protagonists as much as by men. Now, many have attributed this to the success of such film as Wicked and The Substance, which is a movie that I have never heard of, but hey, I'm all for it. I would go back even to Barbie because you need a precedent. You know, this is why I'm interested in history. You need something to come before so that people can come after. Anyway, before we celebrate too hard, there have been some troubling developments in the war on gender. This week, federal agencies were ordered to scrub their websites of what is being called gender ideology. And I say that kind of with quotation marks because nobody really knows what that means or nobody is willing to define it. From the Trump administration, certainly. This latest news springs from an executive order signed by said administration instructing all federal agencies to remove from their websites any information pertaining to gender ideology. There it is again. Now, in practice, what this means is we're talking about critical health data that has been erased overnight. The census website went dark. HIV surveillance data disappeared. Youth risk survey data gone. Now, for someone who spent many years watching information, access to information expand, seeing it contract is a deeply concerning development, and I will be keeping an eye on this as it unfolds. Now, also in the news, a story, and of course, you know what that means. I just have to say, it's the attack on woke that is baffling to me. Anyway, why? But it's already under attack. Also in the news, that's why they need to be the agencies, a story that struck me deeply. This is out of Japan. Elderly women who are committing petty crimes in order to get into prison. That's right. They're trying to be imprisoned. And why is that? Prison offers what society won't. Regular meals, healthcare, and community. An 81-year-old woman in this article that I saw is quoted as saying that prison is the most stable life for her. Now, we need to really examine what that says about social safety nets. Loneliness and trauma is one of the most devastating illnesses of our age. And to think that this is happening on a widespread basis in Japan, I can't imagine that we are too far behind. They're often trendsetters. And finally, I would like to share a little public service announcement. Do you think your boyfriend is cheating? The most unlikely suspect is coming to the rescue. Facebook. Apparently, there is a vast network of "Are We Dating the Same Guy?" groups on Facebook and that span the globe. This isn't a new thing. I just read about it. The groups are open only to women who must pass vetting checks in order to be admitted, so they keep out the creepers. Posts ask questions such as, "Any info on this guy?" along with photographs. Answers range from, "Oh, someone just posted about him a few days ago," to, "Oh my God, he's my fiance." Now, listen, with the rails off fact checking over at Facebook, I am not exactly endorsing them, but you know, if you're suspicious, let me just say this could come in very, very handy. Now, on to our ill-behaved women. Some female icons that I knew about and others that I discovered when I started researching my book. And even though I got a degree, The Queen Pin Chronicles is what I mean when I say my book, which is actually three books. Even though I got a degree in and worked in journalism, I was not aware until recently that not all that long before I was born, the phrase woman reporter was considered an oxymoron. Now, nevertheless, these pioneers not only influenced my career choice, they have shaped every character that I've written into the Queen Pin Chronicles. Let's start with Nellie Bly. So she was around way back in 1887. She was, I think, 23 at the time. She pulled off what might be the most daring undercover investigation of all time. And I know this as someone who has spent some time in some mental wellness facilities. She got herself committed to the Blackwell Island Asylum. Now, think about the courage that this took, because in those days, insane asylums were like roach motels. People checked in, but they didn't check out. Husbands could have their wives committed on a whim, and then they'd never be heard from again. So to get that story and expose systemic abuse, Bly risked everything, including her freedom. For 10 days, she lived among the patients, documenting horrific conditions, abuse, and neglect. Her expose, 10 Days in a Madhouse, didn't just launch the genre of stunt journalism, though. It led to real reforms. Now, what's so interesting about this, again, is that her book came out in 1887, almost 20 years before Upton Sinclair's The Jungle was published. Now, I mentioned this, and maybe it's changed today, but when I was in school, I learned about Upton Sinclair's daring expose of Chicago's meatpacking industry, but not a word on Nellie Bly. Meanwhile, did you learn about Nellie Bly? No? No? Nope. See? I've got four women in the room. All of them are no's. Well, five, including me. Anyway, and we're a range of ages. So Nellie Bly was... She did much more. She traveled around the world in an attempt to beat the fictional 80-day journey of Phileas Fogg in Around the World in 80 Days. Interesting. She was also the first female war correspondent reporting from the front lines on World War I when she was in her 50s. Her work raised awareness about mental health, leading to improvements in institutional conditions. She reported on abuse of women by police, employment agencies, stealing from immigrants, and corrupt politicians. Sound familiar? She inspired reform movements and broke gender stereotypes, all the while paving the way for women in journalism like me as she ushered in this age of investigative journalism. The same was true of Margaret Bourke White, who, interestingly, I did learn about in school, maybe because she took photographs of giant phallic buildings. I don't know. I don't mean to belittle her accomplishments, though. People tried that while she was alive. When she was wanting to photograph the Otis Steel Company, people questioned whether she and her delicate cameras could handle the heat and grit of a steel mill. Now, I grew up going into steel mills because my father worked in steel, and they are hot and gritty, but come on. Worse, though, for her, for real, were the technical problems that she faced, not her delicate machinery. Black and white film of that era was sensitive to blue light, but not the reds and oranges of hot steel. So she would see these beautiful images, but her photographs came out nothing but darkness. But she did not give up. Nope. She innovated, bringing in magnesium flares to light her scenes. Flash bulbs. The results, some of the best steel factory photographs of the era. She didn't just stop there either. She was the first American female war photo journalist. So Bly, correspondent, Bourke White, photojournalist. She took the photograph also that became the first cover of Life magazine. Interest. I know. I didn't realize that either. And this is something I learned while researching for Havana Girls. Bourke White became the first foreign photographer permitted to take pictures of Soviet industry under their five-year plan. Right? You're going to have to just guess as to why that might be pertinent to my mafia-inspired books. Anyway, As the legend goes, her career was launched because – oh, I'm sorry. I left out a whole sentence here. This last one that I want to talk to you about today, she only came up while I was researching Vegas Girls. I had never heard of Agnes Underwood before then. As the legend goes – her career was launched because she wanted silk stockings. When her husband said they couldn't afford them, she threatened to get a job. Now, according to Underwood herself, this was an empty threat because she had no idea how to find employment. It was pure chance when a friend phoned her up the next day and told her about a temporary opening for a switchboard operator at the Los Angeles Record. That temp job launched one of the most memorable and remarkable careers in crime reporting. By 1947, Aggie had become the first female city editor of a major metropolitan newspaper. But at that time, she didn't consider this a coup. In fact, the job was punishment because she had gotten too close to the real killer in a mafia murder story. Now, this one may be a little bit more obvious how it's related to Vegas Girls. But nonetheless, she protected her job with everything she had. She even kept a baseball bat and a starter pistol at her desk. There's a great photo of her with a bat, and I'll post it on Instagram. Honestly, if somebody who's covered everything from society parties to crime scenes, I can relate to her need for options when dealing with overzealous subjects. Because on my very first day as a theater critic at a local arts weekly, the fellow whose job I took marched into the office and punched the editor in the nose before storming out. He bled and ended up having to go to the doctor or urgent care or something. I had no idea the guy had been fired before I took that job, but I have to admit, I hate admitting this, but it's true. I left the job. That scared me off. I was supposed to be writing film and theater reviews, and I really didn't want to run into this guy in a dark alley. It just didn't seem like an auspicious start. So knowing what I know now, I am sure that none of those women would have been put off by such an episode. They, like my characters, are much braver than me. But that's what's so great about writing characters, right? Anyway, these women, they didn't just write gossip or social news or give household tips, which was, by the way, the acceptable form of lady journalism. They were covering murders, corruption, and injustice. And here's what I find fascinating. Newspapers actually started hiring more women reporters, not because they believed in equality, but because these sob sisters, as they were derisively called, could get stories male reporters could not. Now, I mean, really, no surprise there. Women would talk to their subjects. They could slip into places that men could not go, and they brought in readers and therefore advertising dollars. Nonetheless, despite proving themselves again and again by 1930, and remember, this is around the time that these women were making their names in journalism, women made up only about 25% of journalists. Today, it's only risen to about 40%. And of course, the higher up you go in the newsroom management structure, the fewer women you will find. Not that this is unique to journalism, as we all know, and as someone who herself has navigated multiple careers from arts marketing to TV host to novels, I have seen how patterns persist across industries. Okay. Before we wrap up, I do like to end with events where you can find me in the coming days. But as it turns out, in the next few weeks, I'm doing a lot of private events. Yes, private, which really is just a fancy way of saying I'm doing a lot of book clubs. But you can possibly get in on that too. Check out my website, llkirshner.com/book-clubs. Otherwise, you can find me next at the Palm Harbor Library with author Kate Shanahan on March 13th, celebrating her new book. More on that in my Instagram at LL Kirshner Author. That's LLKIRCHN, as in naughty, ER. And that is all for today's episode of Ill Behaved Women. Remember, sometimes breaking the rules isn't just an option, it's a necessity. Until next time, stay bold, curious, and never apologize for taking up space. You've been listening to Ill Behaved Women with your host, LL Kirshner. We'll talk next month.